Good evening. Welcome to the Solarian Report. Today is June 5th, 2014. I'm Catherine Austin Fitz. I'm delighted you could join me this evening. Upcoming events, we have a lunch with Catherine in June 22nd, 2 weeks in Marin County. That's going to be a Sunday, a wonderful day. It's a group that's gathered before. If you're in the area, there's still seats available. You might want to join us. We're limiting it to 30. So sign up if you're interested. Then, tremendous energy gathering around the Secret Space Program and Breakaway Civilization, June 28th and 29th in San Mateo, California, south of San Francisco. If you go to the blog, you can click on the banner and go learn all about it. If you look at who's coming, it's the audience is going to be more amazing even than the speakers. So it looks like the fact that we're trying to do a very serious inquiry and serious conversation of some pretty authentic people is attracting more authentic people. So I'm sort of excited. If you're in the area, you can attend. That's a Saturday, Sunday. If not, you can also attend online. So check out the online access. After that's over, I'm going to head back to Tennessee. I've got to stop over in Los Angeles to do Coast to Coast live in the studio. Our theme tonight is the pot calling the kettle black. If you look at world leaders all around the globe, everybody's accusing everybody else of doing something they really are doing, except the guy doing the accusing is probably doing it worse. So the name calling just makes everybody look ridiculous. You know, you're trying to make the other team look bad and you look good. But the reality is, and more often than not, the pot is calling the kettle black and the lies are getting progressively more ridiculous. Of course, you know, I was frustrated as Obama announces his new EPA regulations this week and then promotes them on the theory that they're protecting public health to back up the supposed goals of these regulations to go into effect as soon as 2015 would be to cut carbon emissions by 30% by 2030 from the peak levels in 2005 before we started implementing the efforts to use natural gas significantly. The rule is 645 pages long, and it's targeted at the fossil fuel plants, a real targeting of coal. So tough news for Kentucky and the coal states in the middle of an election year. As you know, it orders the states to adopt a cap and trade or carbon tax. As you know, I believe the actual goal is to create a new complex taxation system. Every time they've tried to do that, they've hit a real force field. And the problem is the kind of system they're going to come up with is very political, very arbitrary, and will have a significant hand at taking central control on a whole new level and destroying more local economy and small business. Yes, there's still more that could be destroyed. So, you know, this is something we don't want to have anything to do with. My guess is the Republicans are going to try very hard to stop it. They're the ones who really represent small business, but they also represent some of the fossil fuel interests that are going to get gored. So it's going to be interesting. The Wall Street Journal, who I often don't agree with, had a very good editorial on this, and I'll post it up on the blog. This is one where I do agree with them. Obama is out saying that this is designed to protect the American people's health. And you almost don't know what to say to that. The chutzpah involved is so shocking. This coming from the people who insist we eat GMOs and are spraying chemtrails over our heads and insisting we take vaccines. So all with funding that we provide with our tax money. So the idea they should be concerned with our public health is, of course, ridiculous. However, the shift to renewables is really on, and renewable energy, and that's part of what, you know, the theory is this is promoting. I put up a series of different articles on different innovations in solar, as well as an article from Bloomberg on Warren Buffett's big bet on renewables through his energy company. And the energy model that the United States is moving to and the world is moving to is very robust. The idea is let's take the fossil fuels, invest in new technology and renewable energy, see what works, but don't be dependent on any one thing. Obviously, the United States is going to be heavily reliant on natural gas for some period of time. But I think the thing that's really driving this is the economics of solar and other renewables is getting much more attractive. And you see lots of innovations every day, and some of those are up on the blog. The goal, of course, is cheap and redundant energy sources that allow the U.S. to maintain, and all of North America to maintain, a much more independent base, and from that base to project global power and shift resources into space and space exploration. It's all part of the breakaway. Anyway, so our theme this week is the pot calling the kettle black. As various leaders try and engineer all these things, they're all accusing each other of what the other is doing. Money and markets. Europe has been rocked by elections. I put a interview from Spiegel online from Marine Le Pen, the leader of France's National Front Party, which scored its first nationwide poll victory in the European elections weeks ago, and is trying to form a political group in the European Parliament. And she echoes sentiments that are being heard worldwide. The idea being the European Union is just centralization that has really harmed the economy. And this is, you know, and as part of this, Europe is, of course, being rocked by the kind of deflation we're seeing here. And Le Pen does a very good job of sort of explaining why this is wrong. And I think the question for all these groups, all the groups that are coming together and say, wait a minute, we need to decentralize, is how do you create a series of visions that will allow us to sort of support each other cross-border. And that's what needs to come together if we're going to get a really important shift. And I put a variety of things up on the blog this week to kind of talk a little bit about what we need to do to have something other than a, you know, if the leadership's plan is to centralize control of the economy and quietly depopulate, then what's our plan? Because if we're not going to depopulate, then we need to come to something which is in harmony or certainly alignment with the ecosystem. And there are absolutely ways to do it. There's an entrepreneur from Memphis who sent me his proposal on how we should do it. It's up on the blog called Mythgard 1.0. And it describes, or it's by Mythgard 1.0. And it describes many of the issues we all have to grapple with if we're going to try and come up with an alternative plan. As I said, deflation is stalking everybody and everything. The ECB announced a negative deposit rate on bank reserves, negative 0.01%. That's one basis point. So there are 100 basis points in 1%. And it's 0.01%. They're hoping to inspire lending. It's kind of a cross current, because if you look at what the European Union and regulation and everything else is doing, it's basically shutting down the economy on the European equivalent of Main Street, really making life impossible for small business. And you're turning around and saying, oh, we're hoping to inspire lending. The U.S. has revised its first quarter growth. I said in the first quarter that we had contracted, even though they were announcing 0.8% growth, which is essentially nothing. That's 8 basis points. They've revised first quarter growth to negative 1%. Given how much money we're printing, that means the contraction in real terms was even more. My guess is the revision is designed so that they can announce growth in the second quarter. But if you look around the economy, you see plenty of areas of the economy that are really slowing down or experiencing sort of cash flow meltdown. So deflation is clearly afoot. I posted a commentary called Wither the U.S. Dollar, because as this happens, as the cash flows slow down, you always get pundits who are screaming more and more about the dollar's going to collapse and things aren't going to work. And it's very sort of negative stuff on the dollar, when in fact, if anything, we've seen the dollar rising this week. When people get worried about liquidity issues and the economy, that's, you know, for now, that's what's happening. They're going to the dollar. And what I've said many times is I don't see the dollar having a significant problem this year. Check that commentary out on the blog. It's called Wither the U.S. Dollar, and then another one related to that called Speak Life into Our Situation. I'm a little bit tired of listening to various pundits scream about how the end of the world is coming. I think it is highly irresponsible, and it leads to financial decisions which are the wrong decisions. If you want an example of people who are headed in the right direction, a couple of weeks ago, I put up my latest crowdfund. We gave a small donation to something called Solar Freakin' Roadways, about integrating solar and renewable technology into the roadways and sort of the infrastructure of the country. And it was interesting. Several weeks later, Mark Dancy wrote a commentary about it. Mark Dancy's an entrepreneur with an incubator for sort of new technology. Well, I have great respect for his Australian. And his incubator is, he goes back and forth between Australian, and he's got part of the incubator here in the U.S. And he wrote a long piece about, you know, what the pros and cons of the proposal were. My attitude is this is exactly what we need to be inventing. I don't care if it works or not. Obviously, I'd love to see it work, but if it fails, we need to be failing in the right direction where ultimately success will be. And I think figuring out how to make solar roadways is a lot more productive than shrieking about the, you know, the coming collapse of the dollar. Internet wars, as the Snowden revelations reverberate around the world, you have more and more leadership realizing they need their own payment systems, they need encryption, they need ways of dealing with the internet that doesn't sort of suck them into the machinery. I've been putting a series of articles up about that, one being sort of regulatory decisions in China and Europe related to Google. We had the German minister propose that we break up Google, one French economic minister saying they didn't want to be a digital colony. And China urges its banks to remove IBM servers over espionage concerns. So where one of the things very deflating for the economy is the fact that, you know, we now are living in a world where we have to rely on systems we don't trust, whether you're in the United States, Germany, France, China, wherever. We had probably the stupidest, most insulting article I've ever read in the Wall Street Journal this week from a guy named John Steele Gordon saying all of the deflation is really coming from the semiconductor. No attribution to what happens from government regulation, taxation, and top-down criminality and things like entrapment of people with the housing bubble. You know, it was quite amazing, and I'm sure the criminals appreciated his efforts. There are a whole series of commentaries over the last 2 weeks I want to point out to you. Got some really great stuff up on the blog. One article, Scientists Achieve Quantum Teleportation Breakthrough That Could Prove Einstein Wrong. Basically, if you remember Star Trek and Beam Me Up, Scotty, they're saying they can do it now. It's quite, you know, amazing and an example of sort of the breakthrough things that are happening in technology everywhere you turn. Turkey cuts off the Euphrates flow. Charles Hugh Smith joined me to talk about soft weapons. That's a perfect example of when I describe soft weapons. They're cutting off the water to Syria and Iraq. You know, my guess, it wouldn't surprise me to learn that the pressure brought by the United States has Turkey doing this, but it's a perfect example of natural resource warfare and the kind of covert warfare we're seeing around the world and the efforts to control and use water as a control tool are going to only increase. A great piece from The Economist called Asian Business, A World to Conquer. It's off the homepage now, but if you drill back, you can get it. And there was a 14-page spread in The Economist really talking about the fact that the Asian corporations, which really haven't competed as to brand and sort of sophistication with the European and the American to date, are now taking the step up to do that. It's all part of the conversation I said as Alibaba prepares to go public in the United States. I think that is going to be a very sort of rock the world moment. And I think the Economist took time to step back and look at the deeper issue there, and I would recommend it to you. I did a review of Glenn Greenwald's new book, No Place to Hide, about the Snowden revelations. It's up on the blog. Greenwald does a real service by pulling it all together, and I think it really helps you understand the challenge we have of dealing with systems. He doesn't go into entrainment, but if you add what Snowden has described to us and you layer entrainment on top of it, what you realize is the extent to which we're dealing with systems that have absolutely no integrity. Mary Meeker, venture capitalist from Silicon Valley, every year does a presentation on the state of the web. It's a very useful way to track what's going on with the build out of, you know, sort of 3 billion people now having smartphones, and I recommend it to you. A lot of interest in our subscriber base that the USDA has now put out a contract to get submachine guns. Doesn't surprise me, and there are many possible different explanations, but enforcing the food laws is going to be harder and harder. If you wonderful interview with Jeffrey Smith this week, but it talks about the power of what the consumer is now wanting and demanding. And we're reaching, as Jeff said, a real tipping point of consumers saying, you know, we don't want frankenfood, we want real food. And so the enforcement issues over the food supply are getting meaner and meaner. Do I take that as a sign that the U.S. government is preparing for collapse? No. First of all, it's important to understand that the United States government is required to be prepared for collapse. So if I think it's 0 to 5%, you know, they've got to be prepared anyway. So that's number one. There could be many other possible explanations, but if you look at the timing of U.S. contracts, what you know is, you know, those weapons will show up and be available and be trained by the end of 2015. So it's not a 2014 issue. It is, however, very ominous in terms of what they think they need in terms of enforcement to deal with implementing what I consider to be genocide. So I think that it's not that I don't think things are getting worse. I think that where we are is plenty bad already. There was a very interesting article posted on the blog, Little Children Are Already Acting Mean. And it talks about the extent to which very young children are now showing very self-centered, sort of narcissistic, predatory kind of behavior. And one of the things I would encourage you to understand is TV, social media, all the different entrainment encourages people to behave this way. And I'm seeing an epidemic of it throughout the society. And you want to be very careful to screen people and screen those around you. And if you have little kids or grandkids, please be very careful about how much of that sort of stuff they can consume, because it can have a very profound impact on their character. The Air Force prepares to dismantle HAARP ahead of summer shutdown. My read on that is HAARP has been privatized. Very bad sign. At least if it was under government control, you know, there was some disclosure and transparency on it. Financial markets. Bonds have had a very good year to all of our amazement. We started the year thinking, okay, the turn in the bond market is finally here. And interest rates, the Fed was indicating interest rates are going to rise. In fact, interest rates have come down. We've had a short-term correction. The best foreign long treasuries, you know, have outperformed Standard & Poor's S&P 500 by quite a lot. As of last week, they're up 10%. They've been correcting down, and the S&P was only up about 2%. Now it's headed up. So still sort of double the performance on the long treasuries against the U.S. equity markets. Bloomberg had a very interesting piece up on the blog, Unstoppable $100 Trillion Bond Market Renders Models Useless. Here's the reality. You have so much debt floating around the world. Thank you, central banks. The question is, how do you model it if the base upon which is holding it up from a credit standpoint and is paying the interest rates, paying the interest payments, if that is shrinking, and that's what deflation is doing. The whole idea of the debt was you inflate the economy and then it can afford to pay the debt back. That's debasement. Of course, the winner in that game is the guy who can keep on printing no matter what, which currently is the U.S. Treasury. The S&P is moving up even higher, and the ECB decision to sort of go to slightly negative interest rates on reserves is helping. They talked about more kinds of quantitative easing. They have yet to put a lot of significant meat on the table that way. If they do, then you're going to see the strong equity markets move up even higher. The emerging markets have perked up, but with the dollar rising, it still looks early to me. Commodities and precious metals, the deflation is pulling away at them. On the ECB decision, gold just jumped a little today, but again, I still think we have not yet found our bottom, and it could be a long, slow summer for precious metals until we do. As I said, I think the dollar's rising. Despite all the shrieking about the dollar looks stronger, and if this kind of situation we're in right now continues, I think you could see the dollar as high as 83.84, U.S. dollar index. An interesting announcement, speaking of creating alternative systems, very interesting announcement from the Vatican came in today. Francis has fired his entire financial board, all Italians, all male Italians, and replaced them with people from the United States, Switzerland, and the Italian, who is on the board, is a woman. first time woman ever on that group. So this is a pretty dramatic transformation. We had one subscriber ask me the question, what does the Vatican have to do with the financial system? Oh, they have a lot to do with the financial system. Remember, when you've had diplomatic immunity and no taxes for 2,000 years, you can build endowments behind the scene that are quite extraordinary. So wouldn't we love to have a financial statement of their complete global holdings, including all affiliates? Our hero this week is the citizens of a small town in Germany, and the story's up on the blog as a commentary, who built a high-speed network in their town when outside companies wouldn't. And the article goes into the economics, and it's quite remarkable. We have a runner-up as well. A blogger in Singapore was challenged with a defamation suit for what he said on the Singapore's PM. So here he is being sued by the about the Singapore PM, and he crowdfunded his legal expenses and managed to raise them. I wanted to bring this story up because if you look at what we need to get from here to there in terms of really shifting things, putting money into legal defense funds is critical. In the interview with Jeffrey Smith, we talk about Vermont, who has created a new law to go into effect in 2016 requiring GMO labeling throughout the state. They anticipate a lot of litigation over it, and they have set up a litigation fund, and Jeff says are looking for ways of attracting donations from all over the world, because it is a global fight, and that's a very appropriate thing to do. But the key to our side winning is we get the smart lawyers, not just the other side. So every time we hire, every time the pro-decentralization team hires a smart lawyer away from the pro-centralization team and puts money in his pocket, we're that much closer to getting to the nuts and bolts of a really practical and positive shift. Ask Catherine. A lot of questions this week. Let me run through them. In the upcoming space program conference in June, do you have anybody who has been given the gift of being able to travel out of their body? I assume he's referring not to astral projection, but people who can do remote viewing. There is a facility on the far side of the moon, but is highly protected. They can detect the energy field of anyone trying to go there. Men in Black have the ability to trace them. I'm sure they're reading this email, but this is an avenue that needs to be explored if the entire space program is to be understood. If you're interested in that, there is one producer who's done some remarkable movies on the moon, who I intend to get on the Soleri Report at one point. But the remote viewer whose work I find the most interesting is a fellow no longer with us named Ingo Swan, and he has written one book about his efforts to remote view the moon, and that's what he says as well. But it's, if you're interested in that topic, I would encourage you to do it. Whether or not there's going to be anybody there who's a remote viewer, I don't know. But I know some of the researchers, Joseph Farrell, Richard Dolan, have certainly read what they've said about that, whether or not the topic comes up. I'm going to be talking much more about the finance side of the equation, not the, you know, the left-hand side of the balance sheet when it comes to the space program. So I'm going to leave that to people like Richard and Joseph and others who are expert at it. Okay, next question. A friend shared an announcement about Patriot Act provisions that enable the DHS to go into safety deposit boxes without the knowledge of the owner of the box. The bank is presented with a national security letter that requires bank personnel to give DHS agents access to the box and prevents bank employees from discussing the matter with the owner of the box or with other bank employees. A disgusted B of A employee who quit said the trainings were going on last year, and they were told they'd lose their job if they discussed these with anyone outside the bank. My bank is phasing out safety deposit box. They said they didn't want to use up space for that and to keep branches smaller. Many other banks doing the same. I'm wondering how many do not want to do sneaky things to their customers. I suspect this is going on. I suspect a lot don't want to get involved in the legal liabilities or the ethical issues involved. And so when you keep things in a safe deposit box, you need to be aware of that. I still recommend at various times to people that they do keep things in safety deposit boxes because, you know, no matter how dangerous you think the government may be, for someone who's really not a target of the government, and it's not logical that they would be, you can't imagine how dangerous your neighbors could be. So, you know, it's a balancing act. There are some very good depositories, and we've talked about them before with Franklin, and in the some of them in the article I wrote, options on purchase methods for precious metals. So check that out if you're interested. It's in the special report part at the resource page. In your opinion, dear Catherine, in your opinion, does petroleum really come from things like decomposing dinosaurs? If this is really true, why is it located in great abundance in specific limited areas of the world? I've looked very hard at whether petroleum comes from decomposition or it comes, there's an abiotic theory that it comes from the core and so is constantly replenished. Many reputable people take both sides, so, you know, who knows what's true. I do think that if you look at what is clearly available to some of the hardware flying around the planet, ultimately fossil fuels will not turn out to be the most efficient form of providing low-cost energy to the planet. And so I've sort of given up trying to figure out the which one is true. What I'll just tell you is that there are seriously reputable people on both sides of the argument. In your opinion, what is the underlying cause of the dramatic rise in the cost of college education? Have the companies that provided the financing for student loans successfully gotten the government to reduce its overall funding for education, thereby forcing students to take on much larger student loans? No, the money was shifted away. It's all part of the sort of rolling financial coup d'etat. What was desired was essentially a leverage buyout of the intellectual elites of this country. So if you look at how universities are used politically in many different ways, essentially the people centralizing the economy wanted to buy up those intellectual resources and get those intellectual resources helping them do what they do. And then they also wanted to be able to look, spend a fortune on sort of human capital management. So they wanted to make sure they got the talented group of kids and they got them channeling in the ways they wanted, learning what they wanted and coming out the other end to serve them. So it's, if you dig in and you look at the university model, it's very, very remarkably efficient in terms of helping the pro-centralization team win. And the extent of the compromise of the intellectual resources is just absolutely astonishing. Never ceases to amaze me the extent to which it's been channeled and controlled without many of those people even realizing it. You know, in the university, if you read my article, Meditations at the Crossroads, I describe the University of Pennsylvania and all these smart people at Wharton who I studied with. And meantime, you have the, you know, the government, the intelligence agencies bringing in narcotics and working with the Vatican and the Masons, all bringing it in and making a fortune and using that to facilitate, you know, it all gets laundered back to the university in a variety of ways. And of course, you have all these smart people at Wharton talking about urban development and, you know, economic development, and they're clueless about how these cash flows work all around them and what's funding them. If you read the Dylan Reed story, one of the things I talk about is how the drug and, or how the prison pump and dump on Cornell Corrections ended up going, some of the money ended up going to Brown and being donated by one of the large investors, and how that financed a professor who studied genocide. And I emailed him and asked him what he thought about the sources of the funding for what he did. Of course, I never got a response, but it's, you see this profound sort of multiple personality disorder disassociation between the sources of academia's money and what they're talking about. It's pretty scary. There are other uses of the university, and at some point I should corral John Rappaport and we should describe the whole model. I do think part of getting the kids on the debt, they could use the money elsewhere. And if you get the kids on debt, then, you know, it's much easier to control them and sort of channel where they go. Final question on the subject of writing, music, and creative process. Check out The Renegade History of America by Thaddeus Russell. If you're willing to hold your nose, you may witness the glorious efficacy of natural law in the most unlikely places. The world is richer for it. I'm jazzed about this topic. Oh, I'm glad you're jazzed about it. I am too. But I ordered the book and it just came in. I haven't started it, but I very much thank you for the recommendation. If I if I had to read all the books that were recommended, I would end up having a full-time job just reading books. But you guys send, the subscribers send great ones, so keep the recommendations coming because I really appreciate them. In the last Farrell interview, oh, one more. The need for getting the church aligned with and in support of the currency was discussed as a need for the success of the monetary system. I'm unclear about how this church participates in or helps support the currency. Is it through acceptance of donations? Perhaps other ways. Can you elaborate? The church directly or indirectly controls massive endowments and sort of networks around the world that are critical within the governance system. And so I don't think any major global decision is going to happen without the church having input. Remember, you've got 8 to 9 billion people on the globe, and the church can claim a billion of them as members. So that number may be falling, but they're still extremely powerful. As I said earlier in this Solari report, 2,000 years of diplomatic immunity and no taxes can help you build quite significant financial resources. In a completely unrelated topic, I don't understand off-balance sheet transactions. Can you explain? I will put that on my list to consider doing. Ever consider chatting with Jim Willey? Yeah, oftentimes I'll chat sort of by email with Jim. I used to be one of his subscribers. I find that he's so angry these days that, in fact, I just had a sort of email squabble with him where he just exploded with rage because I disagreed with him. And I just feel like he's so emotionally invested in certain scenarios that it's really hard to have a conversation. But if I think I can ever have one where he will remain calm and coherent, I'll try. Someone sent me a Natural News article. The following article, while being quite intense, I believe brings together a lot of things you've talked about regarding the intentional contamination of our food supply. It's an article from Natural News. Mike Adams, the Lone Ranger, is not a source that I trust. So I tend not to post. Occasionally I'll post something from Natural News. I'm much more comfortable with Jeffrey Smith. If you read this one from Mike Adams, you know, it's basically saying, okay, it's hopeless. You know, there's nothing we can do. If you listen to Jeffrey Smith, that's ridiculous. There's a tremendous amount that we're doing and it makes a difference. And that's the attitude we need to have. So I would really encourage you, instead of reading that article, to listen to the interview with Jeffrey. Ah, there are more questions. Sorry about that. Last time you were pondering the big decline in Whole Foods market stock, I listened to their earnings call and another presentation. They're being pressured by stores like Safeway that are crashing the organic party and people growing their own food. That's good news, top and bottom, don't you think? Absolutely, yes. From the grassroots and in the limbs, it seems to me that organic food is so mainstream and trendy, even in part because of Whole Foods themselves, that their stock can't command the premium valuation the way it used to. As Curly Hair would say, victim of their own circumstance. What do you think? Well, I wouldn't necessarily as a business call them out, but I do think you're seeing a lot more competition in the organic area, which I think is going to be very, very good for the consumer. Hey, Catherine, great level-headed analysis as usual. I've changed many of my perspectives and financial decisions based on you and your team's analysis. I can't tell you how much I appreciate it. And then he goes on to ask me what I think of the tiny home design movement. I'm very intrigued with tiny home design. I think it is absolutely, if you look at how much money we pay over time to live in space, anything we can do to be economical about our space and not put money in space. You know, one of the things I love about the Swiss is they consider residence to be consumption, not investment. It's not clear to me that real estate will necessarily, depending on where you are and what your circumstances are, be the greatest, be the investment it was over the next 20, 30 years that it was over the last 20, 30 years. So I think the idea of being very, very smart and doing a smaller house without debt and without settling yourself with a mortgage is very intriguing. So everything depends on your unique situation, but I would really encourage you to take a look at the tiny home movement. I think it's got a lot of intriguing things going for it. A suggestion that we have Joel Fuhrman, the doctor nutritionist, on. I think that's a great idea. I've put him on the guest list, and we will reach out and do that. We got another suggestion to have the Patrick Byrne of the head of Overstock. I agree totally. I've already asked my team to send him out an invitation. Then Catherine, prayer in local political meetings. What kind of prayer? Would you exclude atheists from local politics? Or are you speaking of a sort of generic call to morality? This is a nation of many religions and beliefs. What one person believes is okay behavior, I might find deeply offensive. This one will take a long answer. But I also think that if a group of people in a local area decide that's what they want to do, you know, great, do it. If you've got a problem, move. The idea that one or two people should hold up what is sort of a spiritually positive thing, I find very deeply offensive. If you're in that area, you don't like their prayer, fine, bring forward a Muslim prayer. Bring forward a different kind of prayer, whatever. But I just think the use of the kinds of tactics we see in the divide and conquer politics, to me, are tearing this country apart. And I think to promote them is really to allow yourself to be used by a tool by the pro-centralization team. Let's go to the movies. I discuss in the interview with Jeff Smith. Great interview. Jeff and I took about an hour and we went through everything's happening on the GMO issue. And I just encourage you to listen to it. It just, you come out inspired again by the power of fresh food. The movie is a brief documentary on what happened in Appleton, Wisconsin, when they shifted the kids off of basically processed and junk food and onto natural food. And it's just a remarkable example of why it's so, so important that you have access to affordable fresh food and really enjoy the best nutrition that you can. And Jeff's somebody who's working hard to make that happen. It's a wonderful and very inspiring interview, and I encourage you to listen. So in closing, next week we have Fruitify. It's our time with Franklin Sanders, but we're not going to focus on precious metals. We'll touch base on it, but he's written two wonderful books about what it's like to move off into rural Tennessee and start to build your own businesses and build a farm and learn how to farm and be a family. And it's remarkable, a remarkable story, beautifully written books, lots of fun. If you get Franklin's newsletter, you've seen some of this material before. If you hadn't, it's really a delight. It's about reinventing your life and what that's like. Then June 19th, Megatrend with Jim Poplava. Jim is the proprietor of Financial Sense and also a money manager investment advisor, somebody I have a great deal of respect for. He produced a new article called Megatrends. It's up on his website and a podcast, and it tracks very much with the annual report that we did at the Solari Report. And so that's going to be very interesting. And then June 26th, Protecting You and Your Family from Psychiatric Drugs. This is very important again and again in the military suicides, the school shootings, all sorts of different venues. We see the psychiatric drugs were involved. The drugging of the population with pharmaceutical drugs is very serious. Kelly O'Meara is a fantastic investigative reporter, used to work for the Insight magazine, and she has a book called Psyched Out and has followed this story for years. Along with John Rappaport, she's one of the people who really knows this. And I want to have her on. I want to talk about what you need to do to understand what's happening and how to protect yourself and your family, because this is something that's really, you know, sort of raging through society, and you want to be very, very careful. So until June 12th next week with Franklin Sanders, Fruitify, lessons learned from Dogwood Mudhole. Please remember, don't worry about whether or not there is a conspiracy. If you're not in a conspiracy, then you need to start one. Ladies and gentlemen, good night and good luck.